Hi friend, it's Jessica. Welcome back to Guru Please. Today's episode is about how to treat yourself better. We talk about connecting with the inner child and tapping into a more intuitive energy to live with more ease and less effort. We also talk about letting go and surrendering to what is, which is a huge part of self-care. You're going to learn some simple techniques that you can start doing today in terms of breath work, meditation, and different questions to ask yourself. If you like this show, then check out the other episode with Sandy titled Spiritual Awakening Through Self-Care. All right, let's begin. Hello and welcome to Guru Please, the show about pushing the limits of life and stepping up to live with more meaning, more purpose, and more passion. I'm your host, Jessica Sun. I'd like to reintroduce Sandy Vo. Sandy joined us for episode 64, and she spoke about self-care, the death of the ego, meditation, and how to manage your energy. Sandy is a multiracial meditation teacher, self-care practitioner, soul-centered marketing whiz, podcaster, and a big believer in humans. Her mission is to revolutionize modern living by introducing a new level of functionality through simple self-care principles to help others experience their fullest expression in this lifetime. After living with suicidal depression and crippling anxiety, she has integrated a new way of living through a devoted meditation practice that led her to a profound career path, her soulmate, and inner peace. So, welcome back to the show, Sandy.
Thank you so much for having me, Jessica. I'm excited to be here for a second round and share some good juju to help serve more people.
Yeah, because last time we spoke, we really talked about your personal stories around how you arrived to this place where you now teach meditation and self-care. And then we spoke about the principles behind energy and how you went through the death of the ego and the process of it. But I think today I would love to focus on what are the practical ways, you know, step by step every day, the routines you do, the habits you have that help you practice self-care on that daily basis.
Yeah. So I think that when I share this with people, that it just blows their mind. Because I think that as human beings, we just have this idea that it has to be really, really complicated. Mm-hmm. And it's actually the opposite of that. It's simplifying it as much as you possibly can. So if you're first starting your spiritual journey, or if you're starting your self-care journey, and you've gone to this place where you recognize that you want to start prioritizing your own energy more, the first thing that I would share is to ask yourself, well, how can I keep this so simple that it becomes a no-brainer, that I almost don't even have to think about it? So for me, it started off with a 60-second meditation. So I committed myself to sitting in meditation for 60 seconds and not forcing myself to do like 20 minutes or 30 minutes at a time. And because I committed to that 60 seconds and I did it on a daily basis, what started happening was I began to build this sense of confidence and momentum. It's just as if you were going to the gym and you were lifting weights. You wouldn't go and lift, you know, 50 pound weights the first time that you go in. You probably, you know, put some strain on your muscles. But if you start off with the 2 pounds and you do that for 4 or 5 times a week, and then you continue doing that, eventually the 2 pounds is going to feel like nothing. And then you're going to add more weights, and then you add more weights. And over time, there's a few things that happen. One is you start to feel more confident because in your mind, it's creating this loop of, oh, you can do this. This is easy. You don't even have to think about it. And then secondly, you start to see the proof. So when you look at your arms, like you're going to see the muscles developing because you've, you know, went through this process of going gradually up more. And then you see that proof. And once you see that proof, it affirms to you that you're on the right path. So you start feeling more empowered to continue your path. And that's why it's so important when you're starting off on this journey that you don't feel that you are overcomplicating it. Think about every area in your life and how, as human beings, we are already overcomplicating so much in our lives. And so, you know, this is about you keeping it nice and simple.
Yeah. So start off with something that is so simple that you actually, it's hard not to do it.
Yes.
You know, 60 seconds, anyone could do that, you know, and you're saying, okay, so start there. And then over time, you'll naturally kind of build up, maybe add another minute here and there, or do it twice in a day, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So when you start off, you would do 60 seconds. And once you start getting comfortable with the 60 seconds and you're building that muscle, your body and your mind, it naturally starts to crave it. It's like now when you wake up in the morning, you don't think about brushing your teeth. Like you just go and you do it. Hopefully you just go and you brush your teeth. So with meditation, it's the same thing. Once you get comfortable with the 1 minute and you start doing it, your mind is going to start looking for it because it's creating this new experience in your mind. And you start to feel more calm, more focused, more centered. And from that centered place, you add on another minute or another 2 minutes. And then slowly, as you increase that over time, you have now created this new loop in your mind that seeks for experiences that you would get from sitting down in meditation, which is just that feel good, that like that ecstasy feeling, that that feeling of focus and calm and just more productive in the way that you think. And it's not so much like you're chasing your tail all the time.
I've heard from some people that they have a hard time actually feeling the benefits of meditation. Like it may make some people more anxious. I mean, what's your advice for those people who are kind of having a hard time sitting down for a minute to meditate?
Yeah, I completely get this. And I think that that's why it's so valuable to have a meditation teacher or to have someone that's a mentor to kind of guide you through this, because every person is different and every person has a different, they're at a different level of consciousness. And what I find is that if you're a new meditator, but you're seeking advice from, let's say, a YouTube channel of someone that's been meditating for a long time, and they're teaching you to do it for 20 minutes or whatever, you sit down and you try to do it for 20 minutes, of course, you're going to get anxious because you're like, wow, this is a really long time. You know, so the way that you feel affects from the meditation starts off with understanding where it is that you're at. And this is what kind of goes back to something that I shared last time, and that is self-care is being self-aware. So if you're aware that you are naturally a very anxious person, it's probably not going to help for you to, you know, sit down in a 20-minute meditation. It might not even help for you to sit down to meditate at all. Maybe you just start off by giving your one-pointed attention to anything. So whether it's looking at a flower and staring at it for 60 seconds, or whether it's painting and just like watching the brush and the way that it's hitting the paint and swirling it around on a piece of paper for 60 seconds. However it is that you can center your focus and your attention to that one point is going to help you create a new experience, and you're not going to feel anxious because you're doing something. Oftentimes when people are anxious, it's because they're trying to control a certain outcome. And in meditation, you don't know what the outcome is going to look like because you're helping your mind to be so present. And the present is all about the things that you don't know. The present is the most unknown space to be because it goes so deep when you're there. And that can cause a lot of anxiety for people. So if you're trying to meditate and you're an anxious person naturally, then I would tell you, you know, don't even sit down for a minute and close your eyes and do all of that. Maybe for you, it's focusing your attention on one thing at a time. The other thing that I'll share is that there's a systematic way to meditate. So oftentimes, you know, you might just like sit down and open up an app and listen to it, and it's guided and it's awesome. And it might make you feel good during that duration. But as soon as you take your headphones off, you're back in real life. You're back in your reality. You're back in your environment. Mm-hmm. And the same triggers are going to come up again. And now you're like, oh, what am I going to do now? So it's about learning the systems, you know, to set up a meditation practice. And that's what you gain from working with a teacher. So I highly recommend everyone check out the American Meditation Institute. That's where I met my teacher. It's founded by my teacher, Leonard Perlmutter, who is a pioneer in mind-body consciousness. And he really helped me to anchor my anxious mind in at the beginning in a place that felt more grounded. And they offer free meditations online every Sunday. And I think that being in that type of community will really help you to feel more grounded and centered. Mm. As you're kind of learning the ropes. So, you know, if you choose not to work with a mentor, there's just really great resources out there as well.
I see. Yeah. So really trying to understand where one is, like in terms of meditation or even just being able to center and focus and remove distraction in that way. And then, of course, looking to resources online or in person for just more specific help and guidance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have any techniques that you use in terms of breath work specifically?
Yeah. So in the beginning, I just like to keep things really, really simple. Of course, as you know, people expand their journey with me, then we add layers onto that to help them reach a higher level of consciousness based on wherever it is that they're at. But for beginning purposes, when you feel like you're having a hard time breathing, or you feel like you're anxious all the time, a lot of times that breathing is coming from your chest. So a very simple breathing technique that I teach is belly breathing or diaphragmatic breathing. And this is the type of breathing that we were experiencing when we were kids, you know, and when you look at babies and how they're breathing from their diaphragm, they're taking in that oxygen, that life force energy, bringing it into their belly areas. And then when they exhale, they're contracting that belly. So it's like a balloon that you release air out of. And so that's a really great breathing technique. And what would be a really great way to start with that, because a lot of us don't breathe like that anymore. We actually do the reverse, where we're breathing from our chest because we're so anxious all the time, or we're rushing from one task to the next. Mm-hmm. The way that you would start teaching yourself how to breathe diaphragmatically is simply by laying on your stomach. Because when you lay on your stomach, your stomach is naturally going to push off of the ground because of the gravity. And that expands your stomach more and more and more. And if you do that enough over time, your stomach, you start learning how to breathe more diaphragmatically.
Interesting. And do you have different types of breath work for, I guess, different purposes? Like, it sounds like breathing diaphragmatically might help calm you down and kind of soothe that anxiety. Are there other ways to maybe energize oneself or maybe feel like a sense of clarity? Like, how does that work specifically?
Yeah. So there's definitely many different types of breathing techniques. A really great breathing technique that I use, that I've learned and practice and just like have experimented with over time and found my own rhythm with, it is called Nadi Shodhana, which stands for purification of the channels. It's alternate nostril breathing. So basically what you do is, well, basically within the body, we have different channels, and the channels are called Ida or Pingala or and Pingala. So the Ida channel is your feminine channel. So think about channels as like your nerves. You know, in English, we call it nerves. In Chinese, we call it qi. So the Ida is your feminine side, and your masculine side is Pingala. And that's often ruled by the sun. And it is your more, it's that sympathetic energy, you know, it's like the fight or flight energy. It's the go, the grind, the hustle, and the active side. So if you think about the sun, you're thinking about fire, transformation, activeness, right? And when you think about the moon, which is, you know, what rules the feminine side, you think about calm, you think about soothing, you think about a very creative, nurturing, slower type of energy. So it's all connected in that way. And so what alternate nostril breathing does is it helps you to balance out the two sides of your left and the right parts of your body, or your masculine and your feminine side of the body. Mm-hmm. And so when you do the breathing techniques, let's say that you were having a day, like let's say that you were finished with work and you were like in the go in your work, you were grinding super hard, you barely had time to eat, and you're in a very like active masculine type of energy, then you would release out of the right side of your nostril. So you would release out that masculine energy. And then you would inhale the left side of your nostril, which is the feminine energy. And you do this through alternating your hands, your fingers back and forth. And then you would continue a few cycles of that. And so that just kind of gives you, I haven't given direction on exactly how to do it, but just for those who are listening, this is pretty much the basics of the alternate nostril breathing. So when you release out that masculine side and then you're activating that feminine side, you're activating the parasympathetic part of your nervous system, which is more about creating more calm and ease within the body.
I see. So that's one way we can kind of balance out the feminine and masculine energies.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then the opposite is true. So if you felt like you need more energy, like you need to be more energized, maybe it's 3 p.m. and your energy has tanked and you still have a big project to do, you know, and it's towards the end of the day, then you would release out the feminine side. And then you would activate the masculine side. And I swear, like when I do this, it feels like I shot coffee to my veins, like caffeine to my veins, except I am not jittery. I'm not in a place where I'm out of focus. I feel like my vision is clear. I feel like someone took a camera and like zoomed in and I can see more clearly. And this is the power of the alternate nostril breathing, because you're creating that harmony within the left and the right sides of your body. And you're helping your channels to line up with what's called your Sushumna channel, which is the center of that. And it helps you to create this sense of ease within the body and more focus as well. So it's a really powerful practice. And if anyone wants to dive that a little bit more, you can just schedule a session with me and we can talk a little bit more about what your current situation looks like and how you could apply the alternate nostril breathing to you. I don't go through all of the instruction because it's so unique to each person in terms of how it's being utilized and the situation that they're in. But, you know, it's as basic just going back and forth. But when you understand the principles behind it, it's easier for you to actually know how to use it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very powerful technique that's been used probably for thousands of years. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's so beautiful. All of the things that have been part of our history as human species, you know, that we can tap into, and it's all free, you know, once you learn how to use it, it's all free. That power is within you. And it just creates this sense of trust, you know, with your own body, when you utilize things like your breath to feel better, and you're creating more of that intimate experience between your body and your mind and your consciousness. And now you're like, okay, well, I trust my body to heal itself a little bit more. But now when you talk about healing yourself, there might not be that sense of established trust there. And so we rely on a lot of outer things to kind of get us to that place where we actually feel better.
I see. Yeah, this is more of an inner healing where we take it upon ourselves to do it, and we trust ourselves to do it inside us rather than looking outwardly for more band-aid solutions or advice that maybe once was intuitive or known, but now has been forgotten.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So a lot of these practices just help us to get back to that space.
So we spoke about before the show, I noticed that you live from like a place of intuition, mostly, I would say, and from the heart. And I was wondering, how do we tap into that side of us? Because I think a lot of us in this society tend to maybe live from more of a masculine energy and a place where we're kind of chasing results, proving something, doing things. And curious how you're able to kind of have more flow and more of an intuitive way of living and being.
Yeah, well, the first thing that I will share is that it didn't happen overnight. And mm-hmm. that if I reflect back on my journey, the first step for me was learning what self-love and self-trust actually meant. Like, what does it mean to be kind to yourself? What does it mean to be compassionate to yourself? I think that naturally, a lot of us are already, you know, very kind to other people and compassionate to other people. We're people pleasers. We'll bend over backwards. But when it comes to ourselves, we lack that sense of self-compassion. So I really had to start there. And I had to forgive myself for the times that I have compromised my own well-being to hustle, to grind. Because, you know, like you said, so many of us women, we actually operate from our masculine space. And when you put blame on yourself for operating from that space, or when you start feeling guilty about yourself and you just start feeling shame almost, then you're just causing a deeper groove in that wounding a little bit more. But when you can just respect yourself and give yourself compassion and recognize that the reason why we are the way we are in a very large sense is because of how society has conditioned us to be, you know, like we learn to follow a very linear path of this is what you got to do. And you got to make sure that you work hard and get A's and, you know, go to school, graduate, get a job, like sit in a cubicle, work super hard so you can get money to pay for, you know, your bills, and you can, you know, have retirement money and funds and insurance and all that stuff. And it gets us into this hamster wheel of this loop almost. And we never feel enough. We never feel enough. And so when you practice having more self-love, by just honoring your energy, by just saying, okay, like talking to yourself, like there's a little kid in there, you know, and it's a little child. And how would you talk to that child and nurturing that inner child, you know, to say, okay, like you've worked really hard today. Let's just slow down for a little bit. What makes you feel good? Okay. You want to listen to some music? Let's listen to that song that you really like listening to. I actually had to talk to myself in this way when I was practicing having that self-love. And as I started doing this, I started feeling more respect for myself. I started valuing myself more. I started to have more compassion for myself. And from that compassionate place, your heart begins to expand. You're not operating from this place where your heart feels hardened and guarded. It begins to expand, and you're now in your divine feminine energy because of that, right? And when you think about the divine feminine energy, I want you to think about what it feels like when you go for a walk outside in nature. You know, you might be busting your brains trying to solve a problem on the computer, and whatever it is, whatever project you're working on, like you are busting your brains trying to figure out the answer to this problem. And you're sitting in front of your computer until your eyes are strained red and the answer still will not come up to you. But the moment that you're like, okay, I can't deal with this, and you go outside and you spend some time in Mother Nature and you go for a walk, how do you feel? Recharged, right? You feel recharged. We even use that language. We feel nurtured. We feel rejuvenated. And then suddenly the ideas start flowing through, or the solution to your problem arises, because you have space. You've created that space and that sense of clarity within your mind. And when you're doing that, that is the signifier of you being in your divine feminine energy. And so for me, it started from a place of self-love. And it's not in the sense of like the trendy way of self-love that we talk about, where I take myself to a bath or I go and get a mani and pedi. Like that's great, but you're still going to be left with the same problems, right? It's really nurturing my inner child. And then also like tapping into that divine feminine energy, which is about flow and creativity and intuition, you know, like we as women We have a very strong intuition. And of course, men have this too, but it is innate, you know, in women, because we give birth to babies within that space of where our gut is, you know, that gut hit that you're feeling, like that's your intuition. And when you can do more things from a heart-centered place, then you're tapping into that intuition. And when your intuition is tapped into and it begins to expand, it's easier for you to make decisions from that place. And then you get into more of a flow state, and it's a moment to moment practice. So for me, the way that I used to live my life was so much about, you know, being in a more masculine energy of, I need to get this done. It has to look this way. And I was so controlling about what it had to look like. And there was so much pressure for me. But when I started learning some more of these things, and I started having direct experiences and allowing myself to be guided, the way that my life looks today, my sister like can't stand being around me, because she's like, she shared with me that I think one of the reasons why I get so frustrated is because I try so hard and I plan things out, and I do things in advance, and like it's harder for me to get a certain outcome. But I just watch you not plan anything at all, and you just go in, and then somehow like it always just works out for you. Mm-hmm. And I think that if I was my old self and I looked at my current self, I would feel that same sense of frustration too, of like, how do you even get to doing that? Like, it's almost outlandish that you live that way, you know, like, are you living in the real world? But I am, because I'm still paying the bills. Like, I'm still doing all the things that everyone else does, but I've just learned how to do it in a different way that creates more ease in my life, where I'm not feeling like I need to be in so much control all the time, you know?
Yeah. Wow. So you're saying that this was like a process that started with self-love, practicing kindness. And you mentioned really speaking to yourself as if there were a child inside you. And I'm guessing that you continue to do that. You continue to speak to yourself as if you were almost like two people, like there's an adult and there's a child, and you're kind of helping yourself through, you know, different challenges, different thoughts. What do you do to continuously kind of be compassionate toward yourself?
Yeah. And I love that you highlighted that, because it's not even that child goes away. You know, within you are the different versions of you. Within you is that 1-year-old, that 2, that 3, that 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, however age it is that you are right now. All those versions of you, all those years that you've lived, all those moments that you've had, all those experiences, it's still within you, and it makes up who you are today. And oftentimes, if you've experienced a certain trauma at a young age, or something happened to you at a young age, like when you go back and you talk to your inner child, you're also helping your inner child to be free too. But if you were continuing to have conversations of like, you suck, what is wrong with you? Like, what is wrong with you? I used to ask myself that question, and I stayed in a depressed place because I asked myself the wrong question. You know, the degree of the quality of the thoughts that you get back is based on the quality of the questions that you ask. And yeah. I would ask myself, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? So my mind would constantly look for what is wrong with me. But when I started talking to myself as if there was an inner child in me, not knowing at the time that, well, yeah, there is, I started to ask better questions. Like, what can I do to support you right now? What do you feel like you need to be supported? What makes you feel good? Like, what's going to light you up? What lights you up? What are you grateful for? You know, like when I started asking myself new questions, I started getting new answers, and those new answers made me feel good, you know? So even up until this day, when I'm working on a bigger project, or recently, actually, I just launched a program. I have this school called Prosperous School of Self-Realization, and I launched it the very first time during COVID. And I guess to the degree of certainty that I knew, because it was a calling for me to launch that program, I knew that the right people would show up in it. And we had a really great, successful launch. It was around the June time. And then I launched it again. I opened enrollment for the doors a second time. And this time it was a completely different experience. I found that people wanted to join, but they were feeling really anxious about finances. And, you know, you take together the elections and you take together everything that's happening in the world right now, and people mentally are just in a much more different space. So while I had the doors open to have, you know, 30 women in there, I had 5 women that committed and enrolled. So it can be really easy in this moment as a business owner, as a person who wants to serve, to get into a place where you think that you're doing something wrong, right? And I could see that if it was my old self, I would be doing that. But the entire time I was having loving conversations with myself, I was also not overexerting myself. I wasn't making myself do things in a way that felt out of alignment just because I wanted to fill the program. And now that I'm on the other side of it, we've officially closed enrollment, I can see why that's the case, because I needed space to write this book that I'm working on. And if I, and it's a very focused energetic that I'm being called to step into. And if I had way too many groups and way too many people at that same time, I can see how it'd be challenging for me to focus on writing this book. And also the people who did enroll, they're so committed. They're showing up, they're doing the work, and the transformations that they're going to get. Like I have 5 people, but I feel like I'm serving 5,000 people. But if I was operating from a place of my wounded self way back then I would be like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I fill this program? Oh my gosh, I didn't hit my goal. Like I suck, or whatever it is, just all the mean things that we say to ourselves, and we make ourselves wrong for it. But instead for me, I was like, this sharpened my skill set to be a better leader. It showed me areas that maybe I can start being more creative in the way that I communicate about this program. Cause you know, self-realization, it's when you put that in the Instagram place where people are looking at like dancing videos and like, you know, all this like other stuff, people are like, what? Like, what's that? You know? Mm-hmm. So for me, it's just sharpening my skill set and my muscles even more. And I'm so grateful that I've experienced that, you know? So I just want to be so transparent, because I feel like people just get into such a rut when they do something and they quote unquote fail. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's like, you know, whatever it is that we call failing, I want to experience more of that, because when I do that, I'm actually closest to God. And I just want to say that again. It's like when you are in your lowest of lows, or when you have those moments where you fail, it's actually when you're the closest to God. And it's in those moments that you have to ask yourself, well, even if I don't get what I want, even if I didn't hit my goal, can I still believe? Can I still trust? Can I still lean in? And for me, it was like, yes, 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 yes. And, you know, like I had finances come in many other ways. And it, while it wasn't in that way, I still had it in other ways that continued to support me in my expansion, and also getting great ideas for the way that I'm supporting people moving forward. So yeah, it's a powerful, powerful space that starts from self-love.
I like that you're saying that we're actually closest to God in those darkest moments where we maybe feel like the complete opposite. Because then it's really your choice. Are you going to believe? Like, then it really is up to you, like how you're going to face the situation. I mean, it's quite common, you know, that we'll encounter situations in our lives where our expectations just aren't met, especially if we do have maybe higher expectations for ourselves and our lives. You're saying that in those moments where we feel like we've really failed, or life has just dealt us a bad hand, that's actually an opportunity for us to maybe reevaluate, reconsider what the bigger context is. I mean, what if letting go is just really difficult? I mean, you know, what if you don't want to let go and you wanted those results really badly?
Yeah, I think that's a great question to ask, because that's probably the majority of us, right? And that's many old versions of me, is like, I just wanted to hold on to control as much as I could. But how do you let go when you were so certain or so sure that this was the outcome that you wanted? Mm-hmm. I think that letting go happens in two ways. One, you can continue to hold on. And it's the same analogy as if you were holding on to a rope. Let's say that you're playing tug of war right now and you're holding on to one end of the rope, and on the other side is control, or is it whatever it is that you fear, because you're afraid that if you let go, then whatever it is that's going to happen is end up going to happen. So let's say that you're battling back and forth and you're holding on to this rope right now, and what's on the other side is fear, right? Mm-hmm. Well, if you stay holding on, you're never going to win, because the fear is always going to be there. You know, like, fear is something that will actually never, it doesn't really go away. It's mm-hmm. constantly present. And it's just about you learning how to transform that fear. And so if you stay holding onto that rope, not only are you not going to win, but your hands will start bleeding, because mm-hmm. the pressure of holding on is so heavy. And your hands are going to, even if you just take your hands right now and you squeeze it really tight into a fist, like as tight as you possibly can, and just stay like that for a minute. Mm-hmm. And then if you let go and you try to expand your hand out, it feels really uncomfortable, right? And it just mm-hmm. feels better if you actually just let it go. If you actually just let go of this control you're holding on to, because that's actually that's how fear is controlling you right now, is like you're controlling the fear that's coming through without realizing that all you had to do was let go. And then the fear would transform itself through you letting go and actually regaining your energy back. So that's one thing you can do, is like see that analogy and look at your life and ask yourself, okay, what is it costing me by holding on to this rope right now? How is this controlling every area of my life? And is it worth it? Right? Like yeah. if you hold on to the control of this, if I wanted to cling to the control of like, I need to do whatever the heck I possibly can and like overwork myself and like do whatever to get as many people inside this program as possible and burn my energy and not even practice what I'm preaching or talking about, then in that sense, I'm just allowing fear to control me right now, because I'm afraid of what it's going to be like if I don't enroll people. And that is just a very wounded place to operate from, right? Mm-hmm. And it also is a lot of pressure. The other thing that you can do is you can look at the consequences. You know, like if you feel that you can't just let go and it's not easy for you, that question that I asked earlier, what is it costing you to stay exactly where you're at? And look at the people that you do love, like look at how you're showing up in those relationships. Are you, by you holding on to control of the same thing, how is it affecting your other relationships? If you're not mattering to you right now, the people around you probably do matter to you, right? And what are you losing because you need to hold on to control of this outcome right now? So oftentimes when it's so hard to think about things because it's ourselves and we don't feel worthy or we don't feel enough, it's so helpful to replace you with someone that you love. And like, you'll see things more clearly. Like if you're a mom and you feel like you need to hold on to this expectation, but it's not serving you, like that outcome isn't serving you, then you get to look at your kids and you get to look at, well, how have I been showing up for my children? How do I want to show up for my children? And that thought alone will help you to just let go, you know? And then ultimately it comes down to surrendering. Surrendering isn't about just like throwing the towel in and like sitting back with your legs up on your desk and doing absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. Surrendering is saying, you know, I am willing to surrender my plans for the higher plans, for God's plans or a guru's plan, whatever that is for me, I'm willing to surrender to that. Mm-hmm. And every time you do, the outcome is always sweeter than if it was your own plan. So if you take a moment right now and you look back at every facet or every area of your life, and you look at the times in your life that you absolutely did not plan, like think about the best things that ever happened in your life. Did you plan that? It's probably like, not really. No, I didn't. I didn't plan to meet the love of my life. Like I didn't plan, you know, to marry the guy that I was like sitting in Spanish class with. I didn't plan to have my online businesses. I didn't plan any of these things out. And yet here I am. So when you kind of look at it from that outcome, it gives you more of this sense of just like, okay, I'm willing to surrender a little bit more.
Yeah. And then it allows you to be right here in the present and to see, you know, whatever's right in front of you and do that as best you can. And then really trusting that what you're doing today will carry you somewhere better than you could have designed it yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just like, it just feels so much better. Like you just feel so much more relief when you're not holding on to all of that responsibility and you're just handing it over. Like that's what sacrifice truly means. It's like in your heart, you have a fire that's burning, and that fire that's burning is the fire of God, or the life force of God, or guru, or the universe, or Jesus, or whoever it is that you want to replace God with. That fire is burning inside of you, and you get to anything that you want to hand over, anything that feels heavy for you right now that you cannot carry anymore, you can hand it over. You don't have to carry that weight on your own. And that's where we stay stuck, is we think that we need to be in control of every little thing of our lives. And it starts driving us crazy, because when we don't have that control, we start feeling inadequate.
Yeah.
When really it's not even up to us. It's never been up to us, you know, and if it was, we wouldn't have COVID-19 right now. We wouldn't be going through the things that we're going through as a collective, because it's not up to us. And I think everyone had that awakening, you know, this year.
And when you're saying it's not up to us, maybe there's this myth in the world where, you know, your results are determined by how hard you work, right? And if you're not getting the results, maybe, you know, you need to work harder or something like that. But you're saying, well, actually, we don't have as much control as we think. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, when it comes to outcomes and expectations, we can't possibly know what that's going to look like. I can be very clear about the vision in my mind, and I can see it again and again and again. And I can even plan it out and all of that. Just like how many people this year had a date set for their wedding and they knew that they were going to get married on that day. Like it was set and done. They paid the deposit. Everything was ready to go. How many people said that, you know, they wanted to open a restaurant or start a new business and everything was set and ready to go? Or how many people said, I'm getting promoted. I've been in this position for such a long time. Everything was set and ready to go. But then this happens, like this pandemic happens, and suddenly weddings are getting rescheduled, or people are losing money on their deposit. People are getting fired from their jobs. People aren't starting their businesses because they're feeling afraid, or they lack the financials, or whatever that is. So what I'm saying is, when I say it's not up to us, it doesn't mean that you don't put in any effort, right? Because you got to put in that human effort. Like I've worked hard to get to where it is that I am today. And I'm not trying to say that it didn't involve me working hard. I mean, I think the hardest work that you could do in your life is the inner work. And I've done so much work in that area and in the outer area as well. And so that human effort is necessary. So I'm not saying, you know, don't do anything at all. But what I'm saying is that when it comes to your outcome, detach yourself from it, let go of it. Don't cling to what it's going to look like. So you can sit and you can plan your 10-year plan or your 3-year plan or whatever it is that you want to do, but just know that that outcome isn't a guarantee. And that should feel good eventually, because, you know, it always ends up being something greater. Always.
Yeah. You're saying we can't guarantee anything as much as we would like to be able to know what the future looks like. We'll do what we can, and then after that, like, let go and let the future unfold as it will.
Right. Yeah. Because why spend so much of our times like clinging on to something? The Buddha, who, you know, is nicknamed the Awakened One because he woke up to the nature of who he was back in the time, he says that you can only lose what you cling to. So if you have a specific outcome and you cling to that, then that's the thing that you're going to lose. But if you can detach yourself from the outcome, but still you know, like have a clear vision and do the things that you got to do, execute in a way that's necessary, then your ascending human effort will always be met with descending grace. And that outcome that you wanted to have, because you've detached yourself from it, because you didn't cling to it, what you always gain is something greater. And you can always look back in your own life and find proof of this to be true.
Yeah. Like once we let go, we can allow for something greater to happen. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you, Sandy, for sharing like these tools, your techniques, and this concept of, you know, simplifying and boiling it down to like the smallest things that we can do to take the steps forward into awakening and furthering our consciousness and being able to still our mind and find flow and live from intuition. Really appreciate you coming back on the show today, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey friend, I hope you enjoyed this show and found it helpful in your own life. I want to ask you a favor. I would love it if you could leave an Apple Podcast review for this show. You can do that on your podcast app. It would mean so much to me, and I would love to hear what you think about the show. I make the show for you to help you on your journey, and I love sharing these great conversations with you. Thanks so much for listening.